Welcome to the Department of Justice Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos.
China, the economic and military competitor, has become a front and center concern for the Justice Department. Its China initiative seeks to better protect the nation and its businesses from national security threats and theft of intellectual property. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Temin. I discussed the China initiative and other matters with the Deputy Assistant Attorney General for Justice's National Security Division, Adam Hickey.
Last fall, then-Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced an initiative that would prioritize department resources in addressing a range of national security threats posed by China. And the purpose of an initiative like that is to signal to prosecutors around the country where they should spend their time. You know, any prosecutor in any district, any of the 94 districts, has a range of cases he or she could devote resources to. And when the Attorney General stands on a podium and says, this is something to pay attention to, this is what we want you to work on, it makes a difference. I also hope it makes a difference to businesses and others in America when they think about how to defend themselves and what threats they're facing. I think when the Attorney General signals, hey, this is a priority, hope they listen to that as well. So the initiative's goals are to first make sure that we're devoting resources to the right cases, that priority cases and priority areas aren't falling through the cracks. Second, to look for ways that we can use our cases to support other tools in the interagency, right? We are humble about the fact that prosecution is not going to be the only answer to addressing threats posed by a nation state.
Yeah, because you could indict 500 people in China, but what would it really gain in the practical sense?
Well, I think indicting 500 people would make a difference, particularly if you end up apprehending a good chunk of them. But we're realistic about the fact that some of our targets are very hard targets, right?
Sure.
They're hackers working with or for or at the sufferance of a foreign military or intelligence service, or others who can be very hard to apprehend simply because they don't travel. So the other side to this is some of the problems we're thinking about, right? Economic espionage, for example, or supply chain threats are fundamentally economic problems. And so an economic tool or consequence is what may be necessary to discourage bad behavior. And so that's why I say that prosecution isn't the only solution, because if you want to change the behavior of a company or a state, it is going to take more than charging individuals.
And is the primary threat vehicle, let's say, from China, cyber?
It's an interesting question. I would say one of the themes of the initiative is to step back and look at all the different ways that China can achieve its objectives and what those objectives are. So the initiative begins by framing China's industrial policy initiatives like the Made in China 2025 policy, right, where China identifies 10 sectors that it wants to become self-sufficient in. And if that were all it would is as a matter of state policy, I don't think we'd have a complaint about that, right? We don't object to another nation wanting to become good at particular types of technology. But we go one step further and say the problem is how China is seeking to become self-sufficient in those technologies and what it plans to do once it is. What I mean by that is it's using theft and other tools to become better in those sectors. And when it does achieve a measure of sufficiency, self-sufficiency or dominance in a sector, it uses that to leverage out or muscle out others, other competitors or other countries. So we've seen that pattern before in other areas. You can look at some trade litigation and with respect to solar products or steel to see that, right? Dumping of the product on the market to force
Sure.
American competitors out. And then our cases and other enforcement efforts show how China is trying to become better. And it involves not just cyber, certainly that, but also recruiting employees to steal trade secrets from American companies and bring them to Chinese companies. The talent programs, which encourage researchers at American institutions to take information and recruit others to bring information back to China with the promise of financial rewards, employment, and the like. So cyber is certainly a vector, but an important theme of the initiative is you've got to think broadly about all the different ways China could try to obtain information that maybe it's not in your interest as an American business for it to have.
And operationally, what form does the China initiative take for the National Security Division and your tentacles throughout the rest of the Justice Department?
So there's a steering group headed by the AAG for National Security, John Demers, and the steering group also has five U.S. attorneys from around the country, the AAG for the Criminal Division, Brian Benchkowski, and the EAD over the National Security Branch, JTAP. So those eight individuals are charged by the Attorney General with identifying what we need to do better as a department, right? Elevating the issue, educating the rest of the department, as you referred to it, educating the public, but also looking at our policies and procedures and seeing where we need to make tweaks to bring better cases or to develop an enforcement program where we haven't had one before in some tricky areas. So, for example, malign foreign influence has been a priority area for us, right? FARA enforcement. And that often gets at some tricky areas, right? How do you look to enforce FARA in certain circumstances, like on a university campus where you also want to be deferential to university administration and let them address problems in an appropriate way without compromising academic freedom and the like. But we have a concern about whether it's possible that certain student groups might be leveraged by a consulate to collect on their peers or to leverage them into expressing views that support the Communist Party. So we have to think about how we approach that and develop an enforcement program that maybe doesn't look the same way as any other criminal investigative enforcement program.
We're speaking with Adam Hickey, Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the National Security Division at the Justice Department. And earlier you mentioned there are several vectors that China may use. How do you integrate information that might give clue from one area to something that might be nefarious in another area? Because you have the cyber intrusion vector to steal intellectual property on the one hand, you may have someone planted in a company, as you mentioned, on the other hand. Sometimes they have elements in common. So how do you integrate this type of information?
That's a great question. And in fact, a couple of our cases highlight that very issue. We charged a case in San Diego last October, I believe. The allegations in the indictment are that two MSS officers were working with company employees to facilitate the computer intrusions that were then used to steal information. So fortunately for me, I have the luxury of a job that allows me to see all of these areas. I'm responsible mostly for the state-sponsored threats to the private sector. So that's cyber, but that also includes export control and sanctions enforcement, economic espionage, malign foreign influence, and our foreign investment reviews. So I see everything ranging from purely commercial transactions to criminal activity. And I work closely with the Counterintelligence Division at the FBI, which similarly is responsible for most threats posed by nation states. And then there's the Cyber Division, which is responsible for cyber. And over the last 7 years I've been here, I've seen cyber and counterintelligence divisions at the FBI work very hard to become more integrated, to cross-staff individuals in various units, and to communicate about what they're seeing so that we don't approach the threat as cyber in one silo and counterintelligence in another. I think that's really important, and not just with respect to China, right? You can think about malign foreign influence in the Russian context or otherwise. There's a cyber dimension to it, right? You might have hacking of a political party or attempts to intrude on a Board of Elections website, but these are not just computer problems, right? These are actions motivated by the objectives of a foreign nation state. So you always have to be thinking about what that, who that nation state is, what they want, and how to counter them. And that's a counterintelligence problem. That's not a technical problem.
And you mentioned also the private sector threats, which in this context I read as the Defense Department supply chain is another way to look at the private sector. And they have a mandate congressionally to protect the supply chain from cyber threats and a lot of other things. They're not that far along in there. What kind of work or interaction with, say, DOD is there? Because some of the largest companies and the most vulnerable are also their biggest suppliers.
Sure. I mean, I think we work through the Bureau primarily very closely with the Defense Department, both when we see threat information that should be shared with the department and also with the DIB companies that need to protect against it. So it starts with information sharing so that we're not just holding what we know here at the Department of Justice. And it also requires some hand-holding when a company makes a decision whether to cooperate with us or not in an investigation, knowing that the Defense Department wants them to do that and that how they respond to an intrusion and whether they call law enforcement is as important as whether the intrusion happened in the first place, right? So getting that has to be a coordinated message. They can't feel like they're going to get dinged by their biggest customer just because they called us. That may mean that they also need to make some changes in their cybersecurity posture, but one of the ways we worked closely with the Defense Department is to try to get the message out there that calling justice is not going to be, in the long run, is the smarter choice.
And what about the intelligence community? Because they have similar interests and activities all over the place, and there's, 22 components over there.
What about it in what sense?
Well, what kind of interaction and cooperation do you have with the IC?
So, fortunately, the Bureau is a member of the intelligence community, so that assists with the flow of intelligence, and to the extent information needs to be sanitized or declassified for the purpose of protecting the private sector, the Bureau is positioned to do that because it's a member of that community. We also work with them to make sure the charges we're bringing, the cases we're bringing, don't unduly impact upon their equities, right, compromising sources and methods or the like. They also have great expertise in what the intentions and plans of foreign governments are. So we need to be consuming their intelligence on a regular basis and posturing our priorities based on it.
And how urgently do you feel all of this? Because, you know, the reports come out all the time about the volume, sheer volume and importance of information that seems to be just slipping out of our hands and our company's hands to the Chinese and the Russians. There was a report on the Navy just a couple of months ago, a couple of weeks ago, that was made your sit up and straight and say, wow, how does that sense inform all of your work?
I agree that we need to approach it with a sense of urgency and without becoming fatalistic as well. A determined adversary with enough time and resources is going to achieve some measure of success if he or she really wants into your network, particularly if we're talking about people backed by the resources of a nation state. But what we can do is become better at detecting breaches like that and organizing our networks so that the consequences of the breach are reduced and can be mitigated more quickly. And there are some helpful or hopeful trend lines, right? The time to discovery of a breach is still probably too long on average. I think the last report I read puts it at about 6 months, but it is decreasing. When I talk to folks in the private sector security community, right, the vendors you call for incident response and defense, they think they are getting better at spotting activity and keeping it out. And I think you're seeing a change in the culture in C-suites across America, where companies have come to understand that cybersecurity is not kind of like physical security, something you relegate to, you know, administrative officials. It's actually a major risk vector for a business. It can be. And so it's getting the attention that a major risk area should get from executives. And so I think we're getting better. We got a long way to go, obviously, but there's reason to be hopeful.
Adam Hickey is Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the National Security Division at the Justice Department. We'll be back after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
At Leidos, we have supported the U.S. Department of Justice for more than 40 years with unwavering commitment. The department takes on the toughest public safety and law enforcement challenges, and they don't take risks when it comes to technology and legal expertise. From enterprise IT modernization and litigation support to strategic communications and cybersecurity, Justice counts on Leidos to deliver innovative solutions. Learn more about our shared mission at Leidos.com/DOJ.
Welcome back to our interview with Adam Hickey, Deputy Assistant Attorney General of National Security Division at the Justice Department.
Proactively, we try to develop relationships, if only through the U.S. Attorney's offices, with those companies well in advance of an incident. And some of the bigger players, obviously, are repeat customers. And so we have that relationship established with the Bureau and the U.S. Attorney's Office and their general counsel so that when something happens, we're not all meeting each other for the first time. And that's important. Second, when something happens, I think it's important that there are department lawyers involved side by side with the Bureau, working with the company's lawyers and walking them through what we're hoping to accomplish through the investigation, what we think is realistic in terms of timeframes, what's at stake with their information. And if they want us to, and this is directly to your question, we are more than happy to go to a regulator and verify that the company is cooperating and maybe even vouch for them, I would say, that they are trying to be cooperative, that they're giving us what they can. That may or may not address the ultimate liability, if there is one, say, with the SEC, but the SEC, the FTC, and the Defense Departments all have said that it's not just about preventing a breach. It's also about how you respond to it who you tell and how you work with the government in part. And that can be factored into a judgment about whether you behaved reasonably. And so that's part of it, is there's patience and there's a bit of hand-holding, and let's talk through what you are most concerned about. Often publicity, premature publicity, surprises. These are top of the list for companies that I talk to.
And let's move on to export control. That's under your purview. And export control is a complicated apparatus. It involves, well, state, commerce, treasury, plus your own division here at Justice. So how does that all work in reality?
So I would divide it this way. State, Treasury, and Commerce in their own lanes decide through their regulations what is prohibited. And what I mean by that is what widget needs a license to go where, or what sanctions look like with respect to a particular entity or individual or country. We are the enforcement arm of that. So we pick up after they have defined it and investigate individuals who appear to be breaching those regulations. And so we obviously have to work closely with them to make a determination, hey, is the widget actually controlled? Does it have the technical specifications such that it couldn't have gone here or there? For our part, our expertise is in gathering the evidence of willfulness, of intent, right, that the individual who shipped the product knew that it was a violation of the law.
Let me ask this. Suppose something, say a software encryption algorithm would be under control, for example. What if that was exported and found to be exported illegally, but not from the OEM, but maybe it was somehow transferred down a gray market supply chain?
Sure.
Who's responsible? Is it the OEM? You have this kind of this parallel issue that you do with the China initiative, where it wasn't their intent to let it out of their hands, but it got out of their hands. They didn't export it, but someone that did get it exported it.
So you'd look at each link in the chain. The original manufacturer might well have a top-end compliance program, and something just slipped through, and you'd look at that gray market supplier, and you'd investigate them. And maybe it doesn't sound like they have a compliance program at all. In fact, it sounds like they're potentially a member of the conspiracy to export. So that's the kind of question we ask. Our export control and sanctions programs rely heavily on companies who are good actors flagging transactions of concern for us so that we can investigate. That's part of the way they show that they're good corporate citizens, and they don't want to be implicated in an export control or sanctions violation.
Hey, let's move on to computer intrusion, as we talked about that in connection with China earlier, and that's under your purview, the effect that those intrusions have on the private sector. How do you maintain in this bureau the cyber expertise you need, because every federal agency is always running around saying how tough it is to get cybersecurity people, and sounds like you need some real specialized expertise here.
Let me tell you, it's even harder to find lawyers who are good at technology, because at least when I was in law school, cybersecurity didn't exist as a topic you would study as a lawyer. And that, fortunately, I think has changed a great deal. So we are seeing many younger attorneys who are coming on board having had, if not a background in computer science or the like, at least some greater technical fluency because of their own experience in their personal life. And that maybe makes a little bit of sense, because every generation, I think, becomes more comfortable with certain elements of technology, with the footnote that the more graphically intuitive technology is, the less you actually have to understand it.
So sure.
That doesn't always hold as a rule. We aggressively recruit for folks who have that background, but not having had it myself, I'll also tell you there's no substitute for working closely with some top agents at the Bureau and learning the technology and learning how to investigate an intrusion case by working side by side with the agents that do have that computer science training. And you just ask a lot of questions, and any litigator will tell you the secret to becoming good in a particular case is just knowing when to say you don't know and asking a lot of questions. And once you pick it up in one case, you take it and you apply it to other cases.
Because cybersecurity and cyber technology is developing on one vector, but cyber law is also fairly, as you say, new field. And that, I imagine that's always changing also.
Yeah, I think courts and lawyers are looking for how to adapt physical world principles to technology. And that's a slow process. And maybe it's good that it's a slow process, because you hit the balance wrong one way or the other, say on what the government can collect or not, or how it collects it, you might be making a serious mistake, either under enforcing the law or over collecting information.
Adam Hickey is the Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the National Security Division at the Justice Department. We'll be back with more after this short break. I'm Tom Temin. Adam Hickey is the Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the National Security Division at the Justice Department. We'll be back with more after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
At Leidos, we have supported the U.S. Department of Justice for more than 40 years with unwavering commitment. The department takes on the toughest public safety and law enforcement challenges, and they don't take risks when it comes to technology and legal expertise. From enterprise IT modernization and litigation support to strategic communications and cybersecurity, Justice counts on Leidos to deliver innovative solutions. Learn more about our shared mission at Leidos.com/DOJ.
Welcome back to our third and final segment of our interview with Adam Hickey, Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the National Security Division at the Justice Department.
And I just wanted to get back to something we discussed very early, and that is the indictment of foreign nationals. We've seen this happen in connection with the Russian probe, and it happens from time to time. What happens long term under those types of indictments where you can't physically grab the person if they stay in Russia or China or wherever?
So the first point I want to make is, do not assume that every charge we've brought is public. In fact, you should believe the opposite, because the general rule for us is if we think there's a possibility you will travel, we're better off keeping the charges under seal and waiting for you to travel and arresting you in a country that's willing to extradite.
Or at the airport.
Or if you are going to come here, yes. Many of these targets, I think, are not. Some of them have come to the United States, but not.
But if you're in the United States and you're a foreign national, you'll get them before they leave.
Yeah. We would just arrest them at that point.
Got it.
Sure. But most of our targets in these national security cyber cases are operating from the sanctuary of a country that is not going to extradite them to the United States. And we're realistic about that. So point one, we might wait for you to travel. Point two is, if we unseal charges, you know you can't travel without fear of arrest. And I think that is a meaningful deterrent, not only to you who've been charged, but the people you have worked with, because they must then know, well, if the FBI was able to identify him, maybe they identified me, and does that mean I can't travel? And what I'm hoping for, and have seen some evidence of, is a ripple effect, where people in a community of actors who are violating international norms think twice about continuing to do that work because they realize it will limit their life options.
Sure. And just a final question about the division itself, or the National Security Division. Do you recruit people in general, mostly from within Justice Department, or do you have your own outward-looking type of recruitment, and what's the selling proposition for people coming first to the federal government, and then second to the Justice Department, and third to the National Security Division?
Sure. So our postings are open for the most part. We welcome prosecutors from the field to apply and come to Maine Justice. That's essentially what I did. But we also hire lawyers from the private sector or from other agencies in the federal government. So if you qualify for a clearance and you're a smart, hardworking lawyer, our doors are open to you. Why should you come here? Mission. This is, in my personal belief, the best place to be a lawyer in the federal government, not only because I'm working with other highly talented, ethical individuals, but because what I get to work on every day matters. And I don't make the difference. In my sense, is I don't make the difference, you know, between A and B happening, but I get to play a role in that, and that is incredibly rewarding. I'm never bored, and I don't think anyone in the division is ever bored.
Adam Hickey is the Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the National Security Division at the Justice Department. We'll post this interview at federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Agency in Focus. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Department of Justice Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.